This is Unmind with Great Cloud Michael Elliston Roshi.
Three Jewels Design, Number 3. One Jewel. Buddha is the end, the beginning and be all, and always has been. In the last two episodes of Unmind, we continue our review of the design intent of the three treasures of Buddhism, first focusing on joining the Sangha, or Zen community, then on studying the Dharma. In this segment, we will analyze practicing what Buddha himself did, the central and indispensable method of Zen's meditation. I have written extensively elsewhere on how Zazen differs from other styles of meditation. Herein, we will examine its more physical aspects and how they may help determine its effectiveness. While the other two legs of the Buddhist stool are necessary for a well-balanced Zen life on social and intellectual levels, Zazen is the most crucial and pivotal practice on the personal level. According to Soto Zen, upright seated meditation is necessary to open the Dharma gate to genuine insight. It is Dogen's excellent method that he asserted carries on the Buddha's teaching endlessly, close quote. When we examine in minute detail the sitting posture, the full breathing cycle, and the focus of attention recommended in Zazen, we cannot help but feel incredulous at its simplicity, that something so basic and simple as sitting still enough, upright enough, and long enough could have any substantive effect on consciousness itself. When it comes to design intent, usually we can look for ways to tweak the design of a given product or process here and there to see if we can improve it. Zazen is already so simple that those tweaks have been done and long ago. There is not much to the method that can be further refined or eliminated. The zafu itself, the sitting cushion, is likewise nearly irreducibly simple, a design presumably first developed in China. In production processes used to implement various design build systems, we look for what are termed secondary operations. They may force changes in the setup of the assembly line, or call for additional equipment, or require multiple phases. We may find that we can eliminate certain of these extra steps or combine them with other operations to make the process more efficient, i.e., streamlined. Early examples include the Ford assembly line. It is important to arrange the steps in any production process in the proper sequence to avoid wasted time and motion. A technical early version of this approach is called, quote, critical path management, or CPM. One of its terms, the true antecedent, a critical piece in getting the sequence right, might apply to Zen. What would be the true antecedent to insight, Buddha's awakening, to take the least obvious but penultimate example? In Soto Zen, we would lobby for Zazen, probably. But as Bodhidharma is credited with saying, meditation is not absolutely necessary to insight. He indicated that all one has to do is, quote, grasp the vital principle. In other words, no causal connection can be dependably established between the act of sitting in Zazen and the triggering of dharmic insight. It happens that most of us are not ripe and ready enough for that level of grasping, and we are carrying a lot of conceptual weight, so we need to spend more time in our meditation to jettison the excess baggage. The great Indian sage is also recognized for bringing the direct practice of Zazen to China. He created a model during meditation of four levels of observation: the breath, physical sensations, emotional sensations or mood swings, and conceptual constructions. Notably, his four-pointed model is in itself such a construction. One conclusion that he drew from this approach is that, like the breath, we realize that the other three dimensions are impermanent, ever-changing, and so must be the observer. Using Matsuoka Roshi's threefold division into what he termed dispositions, posture, breath, and attention, we can examine them one at a time to determine their design intent. A caveat: design intent is more tightly focused than intent in general. It is connected to function, as in the old design saw coined by 19th century architect Louis H. Sullivan. Form follows function. Of course, our larger or deeper intent in practicing Zen goes to the Buddhist skanda of mental formations, sometimes rendered as intention, motive, or desire, the multivarious purposes underlying the, quote, three actions of body, mouth, and mind. That may be a subject for another time. For now, let's begin by looking at the posture. Of the four cardinal postures, standing, sitting, walking, or lying down, as mentioned in the Metta Sutta, why would sitting be the posture of choice for meditation? For one, it is obviously the most efficient in terms of energy consumption, other than lying down, compared to which sitting is more conducive to alertness, as we are accustomed to sleeping in a horizontal position. The upright aspect of the sitting posture is crucial, aligning our bilaterally symmetrical skeleton and musculature is the most direct way to achieve equipoise, a state of equilibrium within the force field of gravity. When the body is arrayed in this position, the spine and spinal cord become our zero axis in space-time, the center of our being, in the matrix of the proximate physical causes and conditions of existence. This is the physical basis of samadhi, centeredness and balance, the key to entering stillness. Arching the small of the back and pulling back on the chin, we establish two pressure points, one at the base of the spine and one the base of the neck, which pull the spine into its natural S-curve, resulting in what Matsuoka Roshi described as a sitting mountain feeling, one of immense stability. He would comment that when the posture is reaching a state of perfection, it feels as if you are pushing the crown of your head against the ceiling, like a column or post. But with the caveat that we always aim at the perfect posture, never imagining that we have achieved it. Standing shares this upright alignment, but the entire weight of the body is delivered to the roughly square foot of the surface area of the feet and ankles, rather than distributed over the three-pointed base of the cross-legged posture, full lotus or Japanese kekafuza, or similarly the kneeling posture, Japanese seiza. Walking is obviously infinitely more complex, though walking meditation, Japanese kinhin, is certainly effective, dubbed zazen in motion. Minimal supporting gear is the one concession that Zen seems to make to our natural desire for physical comfort. Perching on a cushion, Japanese zafu, on top of a square mat, Japanese zabutan, or kneeling on the seiza bench, but I think the lift has to do with maintaining the proper disposition of the angle between the upright spine and the body's main hinge at the hip joint. We sit slightly forward on the cushion or chair so that the hips are above the knees, at an angle of about 10 or 15 degrees to the floor. This allows the weight of the trunk and upper body to distribute equally between the knees resting on the mat and the sits bones that form the bottom of the pelvis. These two arching protuberances form a kind of built-in rocking chair, which, when the lower back is properly arched, provides a stable base on the cushion or kneeling bench, as well as on a chair. In the cross-legged postures in particular, when resistance arises in the knees or in the back, it is our body telling us that we are pitched too far forward in the former case, or leaning too far backward in the latter. Matsuoka Roshi often noted that we have to keep making small adjustments to the posture over time, working your way through every bone in your body to finally find that sweet spot right in the middle. The rocking motion that we are encouraged to engage at the beginning and end of each session of Zazen helps us find the center of the upright and balanced posture. Starting with a large arcing pendulum swing to the left and right, forward and back, and or around in a circle, we gradually decrease the length of the arc to a smaller and smaller swing or spiral until it comes to center. In this way, we can correct our own posture from time to time, and particularly when first settling into the posture. It also allows for the body's muscles and connective hard tissue to stretch and adapt for the greatest level of comfort. Zazen, as we say, should be the comfortable way. Reversing this motion at the end of the sit, starting with a small, then gradually larger pendulum swing, allows the body to loosen up and relieve any numbness that may have set in during the session. Numbness does not necessarily indicate poor circulation, but the natural adaptation of the body to sitting still for long periods of time. In summary, we are looking to recover or rediscover the natural posture. In more primitive times, our ancestors sat around the campfire, sitting upright and still while hunting in order not to spook the prey. Your body knows this posture. Listen to it. The design intent of the Zazen posture is, in one sense, to return to our normal, natural posture while remaining fully alert. The same may be said of the breath. The natural breath adapts to the pressures of the moment. When walking or running, we palpitate, breathing rapidly, and often irregularly. When we lie down to sleep, our breath slows down to a more regular rhythm. Sitting in Zazen is a bit like falling asleep while staying awake. Our body knows this natural breath just as it knows the upright, balanced posture. In Zazen, we relinquish our usual effort to control the body in terms of resistance to pain, allowing ourselves to go beyond our normal comfort zone. Likewise, we drop our tendency to control the breath, other than occasionally counting it or some other measure of inducing more strict observation. We begin to see the breath slowing down as the body settles into stillness. If we pay close attention, we can feel our heartbeat slowing as well. We enter into a deeper stillness, our more natural state of being. While adjustments to the posture are primarily physical, we move beyond the purely physical as we turn our attention to the breath and attention itself. Traditional Zazen instructions emphasize attitudinal adjustments, observing the natural process of breathing and thinking with scientific detachment and less controlling impulses. This is especially helpful in dealing with the tendency of discriminating mind, Sanskrit citta, to vacillate from one extreme position to another, just as the breath is continually shifting from inhaling to exhaling. We are all bipolar to some extent. The analytical function of the mind is skewed towards self-survival, triggering the so-called monkey mind, that frantic, chattering creature behind the all-too-familiar internal dialogue. The idea of breath control is ingrained in the culture, perhaps primarily through the popularization of yoga in the West, but also incorporated in such areas of endeavor as athletics, aerobic exercise, and technical training in singing or playing wind instruments. The body is actually controlling the breath in a subliminal context of oxygen deprivation relative to the degree of physical exertion involved in sitting, standing, walking, or lying down, exercising, or running, as the case may be. Our degree of control over the breath on a conscious, intentional level is minimal. The main reason Zen meditation asks us to focus our attention on the breath is that, usually, we do not. Raising awareness of the cycle of breathing, which is, after all, our main lifeline, returns our attention to what is most important in life. The heartbeat represents a deeper level, the metronome of life. When we turn our attention to attention itself, we have reached the apogee of attention, having come full circle. Now we are paying attention to attention itself. Here is where we begin to see the genius of Tozan Ryokai's cryptic, "Although it is not constructed, it is not beyond words." Like facing a precious mirror, form and reflection behold each other. Close quote. Bodhidharma was not contemplating the wall, as the visiting pundits of China thought. He was contemplating nothing in particular, everything in general. Or we might say, he was contemplating contemplation itself. The self-selfing self, as Uchiyama Roshi termed it, in his unique turn of a phrase, conjuring a turning phrase, Japanese wato, to describe the indescribable, the ineffable essence of objectless meditation, Japanese shikantaza. Here, once again, we have come to the end of language. As I closed the session on the design intent of Dharma, Buddhism's truth is uniquely experiential. Master Dogen's intent is the same as that of all Zen ancestors, past, future, and present, apprising us of the futility of pursuing literal, linear understanding, especially in its manifestation as verbal expression. We are to turn our attention instead to the immediate and intimate dropping away of the self of body and mind before interpretation can interfere. For more detail on Zen's meditative approach to posture, breath, and attention, listen to Unmind Podcast number 119, number 120, and number 121. In the next segment, we will return to examining the passing pageantry of the endless, unremitting, quadrennial election year campaign from the unique perspective of Zen Buddhism.
Unmind is a production of the Atlanta Soto Zen Center in Atlanta, Georgia, and the Silent Thunder Order. Find us on the web at aszc.org. You can support these teachings by PayPal to donate at storder.org. Gassho.